All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm joined by Mark Schofield of the Touchdown Wire at USA Today to break down Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields, talking about his strengths, weaknesses, and some NFL player comparisons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. In today's episode, I am joined once again by Mark Schofield. I know you guys are tired of hearing Mark, but Mark is one of the more insightful people when it comes to the quarterback position. That's the main thing that he talks about. That's the main thing he looks at through this draft process. So there's a lot of information there, and I really do, you know, trust and learn from his evaluations and his breakdowns and whatnot. So as I promised before, when we had Mark Schofield on a week or two ago, whenever that was, they all blur together, that we would focus primarily two episodes on the two quarterbacks at the top of the draft that the Falcons, at least in theory, could take with the number four overall selection, being Justin Fields, being Trey Lance. Today's episode, we're going to be focusing on Justin Fields. We'll be getting to Trey Lance next week on Tuesday. And I'll come back at the end of today's episode and circle back to give my sort of thoughts on Justin Fields. But let's jump into my conversation right now that I had with Mark Schofield. So, guys, it's me, Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons, and I am joined once again from my good buddy Mark Schofield, who works at the Touchdown Wire, covers the New England Patriots. We've had Mark on several times over the last 6 months to talk about this quarterback class, and we will have him on once again to talk about one specific player. And today we are talking about Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields, really taking a deep dive into this quarterback as a potential Falcons first round target. Mark, my friend, welcome back to Locked On Falcons.
Aaron, it's great to be with you. I'm wondering if you get to do that Manscaped read, though. I saw that float around on Twitter on Thursday morning. Charles McDonald shared it around. It's quite the ad read. I hope you get to read it at least once before the draft.
Yeah. I'll have to hit up Peter Bukowski, host of Locked On Packers, to see if he can sub out and get me to do that one. But let's jump into Justin Fields. And we've talked about Fields before, so some of this may be a little bit of a rehash. But, you know, one of the things that people rave about Fields is his accuracy. Do you think that's his biggest strength? And where does it sort of compare to some of the other top quarterbacks, that not only this year, but you've evaluated over the past several years?
I think it's one of his biggest strengths, Aaron. I wouldn't say it's necessarily his biggest. I think, obviously, when you look at Justin Fields, the arm talent and the athleticism stand out as well. I think those, coupled with the accuracy and then coupled with the offense that he ran and some of the things that he was asked to do, both pre-snap and post-snap, are big strengths of his in my mind. And then you tie in the competitive toughness as well. And so I do think that those are some of his best traits as a quarterback. And I do think the accuracy, particularly accuracy plus velocity to all levels of the field, those are great traits of his. Those are reasons why I'm not that concerned about him transitioning to an NFL offense, transitioning to life at the next level when the athletes are better on the other side of the ball, the coverages are more complex, and the windows are smaller that you're asked to throw into. His ability to make throws with velocity and accuracy to all levels certainly stands out. It stands out in this class of quarterbacks, I think, especially when you compare him to Trey Lance, who I know we'll probably talk about at some point. What Fields is much more accurate to all levels of the field. Lance is still sort of figuring some stuff out in the short and intermediate areas of the field. So if you're a fan of a team that values accuracy at the quarterback position, you're probably going to want to really take a look at Justin Fields here with a sort of a week to go, because I think that's an area where he certainly stands out. Can Lance improve in that regard? I do think he can. But with Fields, it's a strength of his, and it's that ability, again, to all levels of the field. It's not just – you see some quarterbacks, and it's like with Mac Jones, the accuracy is certainly great in the short and in the intermediate areas of the field. But when you start getting downfield, you see some underthrown balls, some passes that are a bit off the mark, and you start to wonder about arm talent and deep accuracy. With Fields, that isn't a question mark.
Now, one of the things that stood out to me watching Fields, despite everybody raving about his athleticism, and I think – you know, that athleticism definitely does stand out, but he seemed to be a quarterback, from my perspective, that wants to play from the pocket. He'll stand tall in there, take a hit in the face of a rusher. And again, it's not to say that he's afraid to run the ball, because I think in my eyes, when he does decide to tuck it and run, he's, you know, I think the best quarterback in this draft class and stacks up with some of the top runners we've seen over the years in that regard. But in terms of looking at his ability to play from the pocket, do you see that as a strength of Justin Fields' game?
Absolutely, Aaron. And I think his willingness to play from the pocket is a strength that is getting overshadowed with some of the other stuff that we've talked about, and from in comparison with some of the other prospects. You watch Zach Wilson, and I think there are times when Wilson wants to bail from the pocket, bail from clean pockets even, to try to sort of seek out chaos, seek out those off-structure, off-platform moments, whereas Fields, he'll stay and fight. And I think the willingness of a quarterback to sort of stay in the pocket and fight rather than immediately drop the ball down and start looking for an escape valve, even from a clean pocket, is critical, because you're not going to be able to escape on a consistent basis at the next level. You've got incredible athletes on the other side of the football that will be able to chase you down. It's one thing to outrun like the North Alabama defensive front to the edge. It's another thing when you're trying to do that against the Cleveland Browns on a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday night. Jadeveon Clowney, Myles Garrett, they'll be able to chase you down. And so you better have a willingness to stay in the pocket and fight. And Fields can do that. You watch that Clemson game where he's taking shots. He's got guys at his face. He's, you know, doing those sort of micro movements in the pocket where he's just creating space rather than trying to escape as an athlete. And I think that sets him up for an easier adjustment to the NFL game than, say, Zach Fields, who's going to have to learn that you're not always going to outrun everybody. You have to stay and fight sometimes. So that's another strength of Fields. It's another reason why I'm so high on him as a prospect.
Yeah, you know, you often run into this issue where you can be biased by certain things. And for me, like, I watched Zach Wilson against Coastal Carolina and saw him sort of struggle under pressure. And then the very next game I watched, I think it was Justin Fields versus Penn State, and sort of seeing him stand in the face of pressure in that game. And it was like, oh, this is a breath of fresh air in comparison. And so that's one of those things that when I'm evaluating, I have to sort of tamp that down, because some of those things can sort of influence your perspective on these guys. But it was something for me that stood out when I watched Fields over multiple games, that his ability to play from the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strength of his, and it's not just the fact that he does it well. It's the willingness to do that. That gets us into sort of that competitive toughness mold. And, you know, I know there have been recent discussions about Justin Fields with respect to whether he loves the game of football and things like that. And, you know, you don't need to have people telling you that he loves the game of football. You can just turn on the Clemson game. You can just turn on the Michigan State game, the Penn State game, like you mentioned, where he's fighting in the pocket. He's taking big hits. He's playing through contact. He's hustling downfield to throw blocks for a running back on a zone read type of play. He's getting that big hit in the Clemson game and still coming back, leading that team to victory on that night when it looked like Trevor Lawrence was starting to come back in that game. And so, look, he checks so many different boxes for me. Is he a perfect prospect? No, none of these guys are. Even Trevor Lawrence, the quote-unquote generational prospect, isn't a perfect prospect. But Fields does so many things at such a high level that it's hard for me to imagine, whether it's the Jets at 2, the Niners at 3, Atlanta at 4, looking at him and thinking we'll go in a different direction. He just checks so many different boxes for me. I think he's one of the best prospects I've scouted at this position. And as a Patriots fan, I again reiterate my offer of Maine, Rhode Island, Connecticut, like whatever you guys want, we'll send it to you in exchange to come up to 4 to draft this kid.
Yeah. Now, you talk about him not being a perfect prospect, and I want to get into some of those, I guess you could say, blemishes, maybe some of those flaws or things that he needs to improve as we continue today's Locked on Falcons episode with Mark Schofield. But before we get there, guys, I do want to plug the two draft-related podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network in case you're not quite getting enough of the draft kick that you need, that fix in these days leading up to the 2021 NFL Draft. So, of course, you should be checking out the Draft Dudes podcast hosted by Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino, or the Locked On NFL Draft podcast hosted by Trevor Sikkema and Ben Solak. Find them both on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So today's episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring. Ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece, they're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only at BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10 by 10. This collection features high quality fine jewelry that will surprise and delight, and it's fairly priced so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. I checked these out myself and I like the designs that are not only classic and traditional, but also a good mix of modern elegant rings too. If you're on the hunt for the perfect unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10 by 10 only at BlueNile.com. So guys, if you're looking for a way to get that sort of second screen action next weekend when we're covering the NFL draft, of course, you should be checking out the joint coverage with the Locked On Podcast Network, partnering up with the Draft Network to cover the draft live. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL YouTube page in order to watch the 3 days of coverages alongside the Draft Network guys starting on April 29th. So, Mark, you talked about some of the positives and some of the strengths that Justin Fields brings to the table. Let's talk about some of the things that maybe he could potentially improve upon. Much has been made about his performances against Indiana and Northwestern. It seemed to me that both teams were very effective getting at him, getting after him with their blitzes. From your perspective, what did those defenses do right in order to get Fields off his game? Is that a blueprint that NFL defenses can copy and use to attack him? Does it represent a potential red flag for his ability to project at the next level?
I wouldn't say it represents a red flag, but I do think that you're right, Aaron. Those are the two games that come up anytime, you know, you start to defend Justin Fields as a prospect. People say, well, what about Indiana? What about Northwestern? And I think, you know, you watch the Indiana game in particular, Tom Allen had a great defensive game plan and trying to generate some free rushers from different angles and different launching points and attack points. And Fields struggled to see those at times. And it created some situations where he tried to do too much. You look at his second and his third interception in that game. There were free rushers from areas he wasn't quite expecting them to come from. And then he tried to do too much, was running around when he should have just either taken a sack or thrown the football away. And he got himself into trouble. You watch the first interception in that game, it is literally just a moment where, and you do see this from Fields, he thought his arm was going to be able to, you know, write a check that it just couldn't cash because he had a seam route and a dig route. The dig was wide open. He thought he could squeeze in the seam and the free safety jumped it and intercepted it. And those are things he's going to have to learn. No, but then you watch a game like Rutgers where they also created some free rushers. He was able to escape them because he had a better feel of where they would be coming from. And so teams will probably try to copy what Indiana did, try to copy what Northwestern did and attack him from different launch points. And that will be something he'll have to learn. That will be something he'll have to sort of adjust from. And all quarterbacks are going to have to get better at understanding their protections, understanding what the weak spots are, and understanding that, look, if you get attacked at that angle, you're going to have to do something early in the down to escape or create or buy yourself some time. And so that's an area where I think he can improve. But to go back to how you teed this up, Aaron, I love the way you did it and sort of, you know, weaknesses that he can improve on, because these aren't things that he won't be able to do. These are certainly areas he can improve. I'm not worried about Justin Fields from a things he can't do perspective, because I think if you look back at his first year as a starter and then his second year, the improvements he made from working through reads, working through progressions, working through designs, getting to the second, the third, the fourth read on a down were astronomical. I had some reservations about him when I watched him after his first season. Those went away after I watched the strides he made, particularly Clemson 1 versus Clemson 2. You know, same defense, different names, obviously, because guys like Isaiah Simmons were now in the NFL. But Brent Venables was still calling and scheming things up, but he just dissected them to the tune of 6 touchdown passes. And again, working through reads. And part of the discussion about Justin Fields has been he can't work through reads. Well, hold it up for everybody on News Channel 8. I'm a nerd. There's their playbook. I printed it out, put it in a nice little binder because I'm old and I can't read on a screen. There are progression reads on so much of what he's asked to do. There are option routes, conversions on so much of what he's asked to do, and he does it at a high level. And so, look, I then – here's another playbook on the floor right next to me. It's New England's 2016 offensive playbook, and I see option routes, conversions, and progressions, and I think to myself – people are worried about him running an NFL offense. I see a lot of what New England asked Tom Brady to do and what Ryan Day asked Justin Fields to do. So am I worried about him from a progression read, you know, structure standpoint? Absolutely not.
Now, you touched upon sort of what I wanted to ask you about next is because going back to October, you talked about sort of quarterback progression processing aspect of it, and you analogized it to sort of taking a test, and you said quarterback is not a take-home exam, and Justin Fields gets to the right answer, but he takes it a little longer than you necessarily want. And you just sort of spoke about how much progress he made from 2019 to 2020, but is there still room for growth there, or is it, you know, obviously I'm asking a question that I think I already know the answer to. Obviously, when you're making the jump to the NFL, there's always room for growth across the board. But I guess I'm just wondering, is that a box that is fully checked, or is there still maybe a little bit more you want there?
I mean, there's more that I want there. I mean, there are still even times when you'd like to see him be a little bit faster. But I'll let you in on a little secret. All these guys are going to have to get faster. I mean, Mac Jones, everybody looks at him as like this robotic, brilliant, smart mind that works through progressions and does everything quickly and stuff. And while there are moments when he does, there are also moments when he doesn't. And he's going to have to get faster with it because, you know, LSU's defense was bad and he could cover it up this past season. He's going to face better defenses at the next level. You know, he's going to face better defenses on Sundays than he did on Saturdays. And so all of these guys are going to get fast, need to get faster with their reads, with their decisions, because the NFL game is faster, harder, and you will see more complex coverage rotations that won't be telegraphed before the snap the way they were at the college level. You know, you could see some teams when they spin their safeties. It's like, yeah, you know what rotation is coming. The guys at the NFL level are going to be doing it at a much higher level, so they'll all need to get faster. But what makes me think about Fields in terms of what he could still do is the strides he made from year one to year two, Clemson one to Clemson two, the fact that he went up against Nick Saban's defense, which is next to Venables, as close as you'll get to seeing some of those complex rotations, and made some big, impressive throws in that game when he was banged up and we all knew it. It tells me, Aaron, that he's got to continue to make those strides. He's going to continue to get better and faster. He's not going to sort of plateau. So I'm not worried about him. I do think there's room for growth. There's room for necessary growth with all these guys. But I do think Fields will continue to get better at it, get faster at it, and get much better as a quarterback as he goes into his first NFL couple of seasons.
Now, I want to wrap things up here with Mark Schofield talking about Justin Fields and start to think about maybe now that we've looked at some of the pros and the cons that Fields potentially brings to an NFL team, maybe what his floor is, what his ceiling is, and maybe if Mark has an NFL comparison to a current or past NFL quarterback for Justin Fields. So we'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons podcast. But before we get there, guys, we're talking about comparisons, and nothing compares quite like a Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market. They all have 100% real chocolate in them, so they taste just like a candy bar. So if you get flavors like coconut almond or peanut butter, you're getting something that's just like an Almond Joy or a Reese's Cup. Lemon almond cheesecake tastes like a lemon meringue pie. Cookies and cream tastes like an Oreo. Caramel brownie tastes like a Milky Way. And of course, the coconut brownie chunk, the champion of the Built Bar March Madness tournament is available for a limited time. I cannot stress enough, guys, how delicious the coconut brownie chunk is. Even if you're not a fan of coconut, I know Locked On hosts that say, hey, I'm not a big fan of coconut, but coconut brownie chunk is a game changer in the coconut game. And Built Bars aren't just tasty, they're healthy too. They're low in sugar, low in calories, high in protein, high in fiber. Just head over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. So BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action, whether it's the NFL, NBA, NHL, or Major League Baseball. We got the Kentucky Derby coming up. Of course, the NFL draft is there to wet your whistle, and BetOnline has some great draft props. If you feel like you know where Justin Fields, Penny Sewell, and Kyle Pitts are going to get drafted, and it's not just sports, BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. You can get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine because BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. You just head over to the website or use your mobile device today to sign up at betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. So that means if you put in $500, you get $250 of free money to play with. All you got to do is go over to betonline.ag, use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive that 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So if you guys have missed it so far, I don't know what you're doing. You got the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, in which Locked On and Odyssey have been partnering up, getting the insights from all the Locked On hosts, picking for their teams. You're getting analysis from NFL experts like Michael Irvin, Jason LaConfort, Brian Baldinger, Ross Tucker, and so much more. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft on the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. So, Mark, to wrap things up with Justin Fields, you know, one of the things I like to do when I'm evaluating players is look at a guy's floor, look at his ceiling for each prospect that the Falcons wind up taking. You know, you can do that in terms of a comparison to an NFL player or just a sort of general ranking of where you sort of think Fields slots in top five, top 15, whatever the case may be. But what would be a floor for your eyes for Justin Fields, and what would be a ceiling for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I watch Fields, a good floor is sort of Ryan Tannehill, a guy that's going to be need to be helped a little bit by the offense, but has some athleticism and some arm talent, as well as the ability to work through progression reads at a good to great level and execute the offense that's called. He maybe won't sort of transcend the offense, but he's a guy that you can win games with. I think that's his floor. And I think a lot of people would look at that and look at what Ryan Tannehill has been over the past couple of seasons with Arthur Smith as his offense coordinator, and think if that's his floor, that's fantastic, because then you look at what his ceiling could be. And his ceiling is, you know, 2015 Cam. Like, I do think that the baby Cam comparisons are extremely apt. You know, when you see the athleticism, you see what he can do as a runner, you can see the arm talent, the velocity, and the and I do think that Cam, for a lot of the knocks that he's gotten recently, and I know ball placement isn't a strength of his, but the ability to throw against leverage back shoulder throws with velocity, that's an area where Cam stands out, and I do think that Justin Fields can give you that. And so I'm looking at a quarterback that's like Ryan Tannehill to, like, best of his career Cam Newton, which I think is worthy of a top five pick in my mind, especially when, you know, you're looking at, say, a Mac Jones, who's basically Kirk Cousins to Kirk Cousins plus, and then Zach Wilson, who's bad Baker to great Baker. I look at what Justin Fields could be at the NFL level, even if it's just his floor, and think I'll take that and win with that any day of the week.
Yeah. So you mentioned Tannehill, you mentioned Cam. Any other player comparisons that when you've watched Justin Fields over the last 2 years that sort of stood out to you, that just reminiscent of what Fields can bring to the table?
You know, those are the two that really sort of stand out to me the most. I do think that when you sort of watch him, you can see, you know, Justin Herbert's name is interesting right now, because if you were to compare somebody to Justin Herbert, say a year ago, people were like, no, I don't want that guy. But you see what he was able to do as a rookie, the athleticism, the ability to read and throw against leverage, the ability to make strong, accurate throws to all levels of the field. And you think, okay, well, I'll live with that. I would love that in the top five of this draft. And I do think you see some of what Justin Fields can do in what Justin Herbert was able to do in his rookie season with the Los Angeles Chargers, the athleticism, the leverage throws, the ability to sort of handle pressure and fight in the pocket. And so there are glimpses of what Herbert was able to do in Fields' game, as well as even Trevor Lawrence. And so I think, you know, when you're looking at Justin Fields, this is a quarterback with both a very good floor and a very good ceiling, and somebody that I'm tremendously high on and will remain high on, even if he goes to a team that's not my beloved New England Patriots.
Well, you know, from my perspective, I'm hopeful that team may wind up being the Atlanta Falcons. We'll have to sort of see. Everything's up in the air. But, Mark, I really do appreciate you coming on, talking Justin Fields. We'll be revisiting with you very shortly, talking about Trey Lance, the North Dakota State quarterback. But, you know, before we get there, go ahead, plug your stuff, plug your Twitter, plug, you know, what type of content you have coming out over this next week as we wait for the NFL draft.
Well, Aaron, it's always a blast to catch up with you, and I know we're going to be doing it again soon, and I look forward to doing that again. On Twitter, at Mark Schofield, you could also check out the work at USA Today's Touchdown Wire. I dropped earlier this week a piece on creating concepts for each of the five prospects, looking through some playbooks, scheming some stuff up, you know, route concepts that they've thrown well, that they've read well, that they've deciphered well against different defensive coverages. So if you want to get into the sort of nerdy weeds of play design and stuff like that, you can check that out at touchdownwire.usatoday.com.
All right, Mark, appreciate it, and look forward to our Trey Lance conversation.
As do I, my friend.
All right, guys, there you have it with Mark Schofield of Touchdown Wire at USA Today talking about Justin Fields. We will have Mark back on Tuesday to talk about Trey Lance. And if I was to guess, I still think the Falcons are likely to go quarterback at pick number 4. That's my gut feeling. And I do think Justin Fields would be their preferred option for many of the reasons I've outlined over the last couple of months. But, you know, maybe that's my own biases because I am higher on Justin Fields. I wasn't necessarily during the fall seeing it with Justin Fields as other people. I was watching it on the television copy and sort of seeing how long it took him to, you know, hanging there in the pocket. I'm like, man, his processing speed is too slow or whatever. And it reminded me of a player like Geno Smith when he was coming out in 2013 and everybody else was high on Geno Smith and talking about him as a top five pick. And I was just like, this guy's like a third round talent. He's always, you know, he lacks that in sort of anticipation. But then going back and watching the All 22 and seeing what Ohio State's offense was really asking him to do. And, you know, he's not a guy that's going to, you know, hit that back foot and get the ball out quickly in 2.3 to 2.6 seconds like you typically would want from an NFL quarterback. But I also think there were elements of Ohio State's offense that prevented him from doing that. So I think it's something that he could speed up. But the more and more I've watched of him, you know, the more and more I really like Justin Fields. And basically the way I would say it is if you go back to the 10 quarterbacks that have been number one picks, the last 10 quarterbacks that have been number one picks, and that goes all the way back to Jamarcus Russell back in 2007, you know, besides Andrew Luck, I think you can make a case, and this is echoing some of the sentiments that Derek Klassen said last week when we had him on talking about Justin Fields and saying that he would have been a number one pick in any draft class that didn't include Trevor Lawrence. And I do kind of agree with that sentiment that you put him up there, you know, and obviously hindsight sort of colors this, but, you know, you look at those last 10 number one picks, and I think you probably would put Cam Newton, Matt Stafford, and Joe Burrow in some order as the next guys after Luck in terms of, you know, guys that were high level prospects that did wind up having some success. Obviously, there were some guys in that group that people thought very highly of, like Jameis Winston, like Jamarcus Russell, among others, that didn't quite pan out. But I do think Justin Fields stacks up with those guys, and I really am intrigued by the upside. And to me, he's just, you know, the talent is there. He's not clean. He's not perfect. He's not polished or anything like that. But in terms of the upside of what he has the capability of being, you know, that is too intriguing for me in my eyes. And that's why he's number two on my board after Trevor Lawrence and ahead of anybody else in this draft class. But that's basically, you know, my thoughts on Justin Fields. And again, we'll definitely potentially go more in depth into this potentially next week, a week from today. Next Friday's episode is going to be that rapid reaction to, you know, whatever the Falcons do on Thursday night. And maybe that does include taking Justin Fields. You hear every day, you know, it's Trey Lance, it's Justin Fields, it's Mac Jones for the 49ers at that number three spot. But my best guess is sitting here a week ahead of the draft is that if Justin Fields is there, the 49ers pass on him at number three, the Falcons will sprint to the podium to get him. And we have more to come with Mark Schofield on Tuesday with Trey Lance. But before we get there, we have one more mock draft Monday on Monday. And my goal right now is to give you my what could be my final prediction for the first round. So I'll run through all 32 picks in round one on Monday's episode, similar to what I did last year and was pretty accurate, I think, for the first, like, you know, 19, 20 picks or so. So hopefully lightning will strike twice in that regard. But if, you know, we'll also have a mailbag portion, and that means that you guys can submit your questions. Probably one of the last chances you have before the draft. So submit those via Twitter to Locked On Falcons, via Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Appreciate it, guys. Have a great weekend. Till then. My one of my favorite draft memories was literally, I think it was after, I can't remember which year, 2016, the day after the Christian Hackenberg debate began, literally the day after the draft. And I was like, wow, we're already getting into it. People are already drawing their battle lines.
Spencer Rattler versus Sam Howell versus Keenan Slovis versus Malik Willis. That's going to be Saturday night. And I just can't wait.
Yeah.
To kill myself.
Well, you know, I've only watched a little bit of Rattler. I've watched a little bit of Howell. You know, for me, like, I don't get the hype on Howell.
I don't get it either. I mean, he was better 2 years ago, I think, than last year. Last year, because, you know, you're watching Brown, you're watching Newsom, you're watching Carter and Willis, and you're just kind of like, he's okay. I don't get it.
Yeah.
No.
He reminded me of Drew Locke. When I watched them.
Yeah, I could totally see that, Aaron. Yeah. I could totally see that.